When I first met Leslie M, she was getting ready to publish her new book, Swagger. And since then, the book has been published. It was published in May, and Leslie has hit the bestseller list on both the USA Today list and the Wall Street Journal list. This interview with Leslie is so dynamic and so engaging. You are going to come away from this learning about what swagger is, how you manifest who you really are, and you hold on to that in the face of everything that is thrown at you. You will be filled with that sense of fearlessness, that sense of possibility. You will understand about self-acceptance. We'll talk about the swagger blockers and how they hold you back from really being your true, authentic self. You'll understand that other people's criticism of you is really just their opinion. It really has nothing to do with you, and you can choose to accept it as fact or check or accept it as an opinion. Swagger is about showing the world everything that you are. Join me for this fascinating and enthusiastic and fun discussion with Leslie M. My name is Wendy Green, and I'm your host for Hey Boomer. Hello, Hey Boomer listeners. I missed y'all last week when we took off for Memorial Day, so I'm so glad to be back with you. And I'm very excited to introduce you to our guest today, Leslie M. But first, I want to ask you, all know what imposter syndrome means, right? And fake it till you make it. Well, we're going to talk about some of that, but I certainly remember one of my experiences with imposter syndrome. I was working for in the technology industry. I had been invited to go on a 6-week program with customer-facing people, which was what I was, and we were being assigned to work with engineers who were creating all these cool things, but not necessarily what the customers wanted. So we all ended up in Nashua, New Hampshire. There were people from all over the world there. And in this group of customer-facing people, there were 15 men and me. As you know, in the technology industry, particularly back in the 80s and early 90s, it was pretty heavily male-dominated. So there we sat, our very first day, meet and greet. Everybody had to introduce themselves. And you can imagine the fear that I felt of, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to tell people what I do and who I am, and I'm going to not sound nearly as important as all these other men in the room. And it was a real big struggle for me to be able to get the words out and to make myself sound like I had this important job. Which, of course, I did. Why else would I have been asked to go to this event? So, the interesting thing was, as we got to know each other over that 6 weeks, I found out that many of the men also felt that insecurity. So, we were all kind of faking it or pretending we were better than we thought we were during that initial meet and greet. So, that was really interesting for me. And of course, with the Hey Boomer podcast that is now 14 months old, I've had this huge learning curve. And that's been fabulous for me, certainly has increased my confidence. And I have to admit, there are still pieces of the whole podcasting world where I didn't even know what I have to fake it to make it. You know, where there are parts of bringing in. Let's go live on location. What the technology looks like there, finding sponsors, all this kind of stuff. So I am really looking forward to my conversation with Leslie M today and boosting my swagger as we talk about some of those areas of building up my business. And I want you all to think about times and places that you may be dealing with, maybe a lack of confidence right now, or you want to try something new and you're telling yourself, well, I don't know. Yes, you do. You can do this. Bring your questions to Leslie. She is dynamite, and we are going to get some amazing answers and conversation going. Before that, though, I want to talk about the Boomers Thriving After the Pandemic Summit, scheduled for June the 30th from 4 to 5:30. It's a virtual event, and it's going to be so useful. So if you have been affected emotionally, spiritually, whatever, by this pandemic, and you are ready to connect with life, you are looking for motivation to get back on track, you want to cultivate some of your life experience into what is next for you, then you are going to want to sign up for this. And every person who registers for this is going to get a complete program of takeaways, introductions to all of the fabulous panelists. You can go to my website and register for the summit there. And also know that 10% of your contribution is going to Meals on Wheels, and 10% of your contribution is going to the Walk to End Alzheimer's. I shouldn't say your contribution. 10% of your registration fee is going to each one of those organizations. So you are supporting them as well. And speaking about Alzheimer's, the first person to survive Alzheimer's disease is out there. And the Alzheimer's Association is going to make it happen, but we can't get there without you. So I have started a Walk to End Alzheimer's team for Hey Boomer. I want you all to sign up. I want you to walk with me. If you're not local, I want you to, you can either donate or you can create your own Hey Boomer Walk to End Alzheimer's team. We can have teams all over the country. How cool would that be? The link is on your screen there to go and register to walk with us. You can go there and donate, and you can go there and create your own team. So help us end Alzheimer's. And we are going to be chatting with Leslie, as I said. So put your comments in the chat box. Hi to everybody that has said hi so far. Great to see you out there. And let me bring Leslie on. Hello, Leslie.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm so good. So good.
So good. She's got her swagger on. I'm going to tell them a little bit about you, Leslie, but we're going to learn more as we talk.
Okay.
So Leslie M. is a former TV host and advertising creative director turned training guru. She spent decades traveling the globe with her award-winning company, Combustion, working with executives and teams from top organizations like Google, Disney, PepsiCo, Lenovo, TD Bank, FBC, Uber, and so many more. And in this training capacity, Leslie has turned technologists into creative forces. She has turned bankers, hi David Bell, into storytellers. And she has brought a serious dose of badassness to boardrooms everywhere. That's one of Leslie's favorite terms. So fueled by her unrelenting passion to unleash true human potential, and based on her experience working with thousands of professionals from CEOs down to new grads, Leslie is the author of Swagger, Unleash Everything You Are, put it there, and Become Everything You Want. And Leslie, congratulations. You launched this book in May, and you were already on the bestseller list for the Wall Street Journal and USA Today.
Yeah, baby. You know it.
You rock, girl.
You got to go big or go home.
You are going big. And just a little side note, Leslie is also a passionate amateur boxer. She is a proud mother of two daughters, and she has a wonderful husband. And she told me at one point that her mother was a true inspiration for her. So glad to have you with us, Leslie.
Oh, we've been waiting for this one. We were excited, you and I, for this.
We have been excited, I know. And I love your energy. So I'm going to try and keep up. So let's start. You've had this very kind of circuitous path to where you are today. Give me a short synopsis of where you were and how you got to where you are.
Whew, okay, I'm going to make it as short as I possibly can because it was a long and rocky road. So I started my career, I was a singer for many years. I moved to the UK from Canada, and that sort of morphed into working in the film industry. Just my music partner worked in the film industry, so I gravitated there, which then led me to start developing TV concepts, you know, TV show ideas, which I would then go to production companies to pitch to see if I could sell them, because musicians are poor and I needed money. And whenever I would do this, I would, go big or go home. So I would do the whole dog and pony and try and sell the idea with the big pitch. And on one of these occasions, one of the guys who ran the production company said, you know, you should be on camera. To which I said, oh, yeah, clearly you're a genius. Of course I should be on camera. And they actually gave me a talk show. And that began my TV career in the UK. Problem was, they wanted me to be Jerry Springer. I wanted to be White Oprah. It was not a good fit. I was way too soulful for it. So after four episodes, I said, I'm out. I don't want to do this, which is about listening to that inner voice that says when something is right or wrong and misaligned with your values. But it allowed me to go on and do a whole bunch of other TV for many years. I decided to move back to Canada. I had no saleable skills, because being a TV host is not a directly saleable skill. Mm. So I talked my way into an advertising agency, and I ended up being an advertising creative director for a fair few years. But that was my first opportunity at being a leader, truly, from within an organization. And what I realized was that I was very limited in what I could do for my people. Advertising is so stressful, so high-paced. And I found that I was so distracted with the work that we had to do for clients and the pressure and the politics that I couldn't develop and grow my people. And that's really what I cared about. I cared about that more than actually doing the creative work. So I came home one day and said to my husband, I feel like I'm using my superpowers for evil instead of good. Oh. I think I'm going to quit my job and start a training company. He was like, what? Are you insane? You hate training. And you're untrainable. I was like, right? Who better to start a training company than someone who hates training and who's untrainable? Because if I can create experiences for people like me, I'm probably going to create the untraining company. And that's a good thing. And that's what I did. That was about 13, 14 years ago now. And that training company, Combustion, went on to be an award-winning global entity training all of these Fortune 100 companies. But it's what I learned through that journey of training and really being intimate with people and figuring out how to truly unlock and unleash their potential that led me to this massive aha, which was, didn't matter the country, the culture, the company, the level, CEO or someone new to the organization, everyone did not believe that they could be themselves, show the world who they really were, and still find the success that they were dreaming of. They just didn't feel like who they were was good enough. And when I had that big aha, I went, all right, I can train all the skills I want, and my team can train them all, but if we don't address this issue head on, we're not going to be able to make those skills as powerful, because the human who's adopting those skills is not fully unleashed. So I want to focus on that. And that led to what I call swagger.
And is swagger something that you started initially incorporating into your training programs?
Okay. Because the thing that they were looking for, that they said that they didn't have, that they wished they wanted, was this mysterious, charismatic, you know, fully in control. They wanted to have this sort of glossy exterior of perfection. And I would say to them, nah, swagger is not that arrogant, peacocky, show-offy, in-your-face, glossy veneer of perfection. It's the ability to manifest who you really are and hold on to it in the face of all of the psychological crap that's going to come for it, regardless of the situation or environment. So it means that you know who you are, you embrace and use who you are, and it doesn't change no matter what the situation is. So when people would reveal themselves in these training rooms, you know, in these challenging situations, stressful, and, you know, I would put them on the spot and everything, and they, the real them would peek out. I would go, there, that's your swagger. That's it, baby. That's what makes you unique and different and special. Yes, more of this. And people, excuse me, in the room would react, because when we see who people, when they show us, it's irresistible. We go, more of that. Oh my God, that was so powerful. And I could connect with that. And it made me feel something. And all of these illusions that we have about needing to be perfect and glossy fall away. And we realize that the only way we can really connect with other people and through connection is how we persuade and move and motivate and educate them. We can only do that when we let those, you know, those plexiglass walls down. And say, come on in, because if nothing gets in, nothing gets out.
So Leslie, it sounds though, like you have had this bad, good case of swagger, like most of your life. You know, you're very gutsy. You went in the song industry, the movie industry, the TV industry, the advertising, you know, all of this stuff. Yeah. Quit and start. What about people that doesn't come natural for them? How do you help them?
Well, that really is most people, because the thing is that everybody comes into the world a swagger-filled badass. You ask any kid if they're amazing and beautiful and smart, they're going to go, yep. And then life happens. And it can be your parents, even with the best intentions, who say things like, oh, you know, be careful, be cautious, don't live beyond your means, don't dream that big, you don't want to be disappointed, play it safe, you know, you're too this or you're too that. And they're trying to help, but that voice stays with us for a long time. It can be what happens to us in school. It can be what happens to us in relationships or our first jobs. And slowly, inexorably, the world has a way of kicking the crap out of us, you know? And we wake up one day and we go, what happened to me? Mm. When did I become like this? I remember when I was filled with a sense of possibility and filled with far more, you know, fearlessness than I am today. And I've told myself all these stories about how I have to be smaller to fit in, or how I have to be so responsible, and that comes with all of this baggage, or I have to set an example, and so I need to be a certain way. And these are very much stories that we tell ourselves. These are self-imposed limitations. Mm-hmm. And so part of what you need to pay attention to is if you can feel the inside of you screaming, you know, we all know what that feels like. Like you say, why am I like this? I wish I were more whatever, insert thing here. That means that you're suppressing your swagger. You're holding your authentic self back, and it's stuck behind all but what I call the swagger blockers. You know it. And if you know it, you need to do something about it. Some people are perfectly happy like that. They are. They go, you know what? I'm good back here, super safe. I'm good. If right. you're good, good for you. I just want you to be happy and fully realized. And if that's you fully realized, knock yourself out. No, you know, do you, boo. But if your insides are saying, no, you know, why am I like this? And I wish I was, then it is so doable. It is so doable. And the problem is that it feels so overwhelming because you do really feel trapped. But what I've tried to do is to help make it manageable and more process oriented and systematic. So it doesn't feel like this huge, you know, this huge tsunami you have to move through, or this mountain you need to climb. You need to take it little step by little step by little step, and you can. And as soon as you take those little steps, you're going to feel things start to shift. That's what little changes do. They ladder up to big changes. So it's doable for everyone. And my advice is to recognize where you're getting stuck the most.
Yeah. So where's that, right? So where's that fear? So, you know, I look at the exercises in the book, which I think you're right. If you can work with them, but you have to be disciplined. I find you have to be disciplined to work with them.
You have to be committed.
Committed.
I mean, yeah, okay. Because disciplined implies that you're always going to be on your best game. You're not. We're human. And we don't want to be harden ourselves in the process, because that defeats the whole thing. Because swagger is more about self-acceptance than it is about self-assuredness, you know? And so you got to be gentle with whatever your journey is, because you don't want to beat yourself back into that cage, right? You want to hold on to yourself and nurture it as this thing is sticking its little head out and saying, okay, world, you know, don't hurt me. So you have to be gentle with yourself. So I think, you know, it's not like a diet, or it's not like this weird hardcore regimen. It's
practice.
It's steps and practice. Yeah. It's testing the new muscles and playing with it and getting that internal feedback loop going of, how does this make me feel? And ooh, did I like that? And did people react well to this? And ooh, and you build up the muscle like anything.
So I have you here.
Mm-hmm. You do.
I have you here. So I want your help.
Okay.
So I mentioned in the beginning, you know, one of my fears is trying to find sponsors. Like, I'm afraid I'm going to go out and I'm going to say, I have this great show. It really is a great show. I mean, yeah. I have great guests. You're a great guest. I'm a good interviewer. Great show.
Yeah.
And it motivates a lot of people.
Yeah.
Don't you want to be a sponsor of the show?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid they're going to go like, no, like, you know, you don't have this gigantic, huge international, you know, I'll advertise on Oprah instead.
Okay. Well, let's start with that. What's the worst thing that can happen? Let's just put the fear in its appropriate place. What's the worst thing that can happen?
They're going to say no.
Are you any worse off if they say no?
No worse off.
Okay. So we know that the thing that you're imagining that's the worst thing that can happen, it doesn't matter, right? Because it doesn't set you back in any way, shape, or form. Okay.
Right.
What's the best thing that could happen?
They're going to say, I love your show. I want to be awesome. That founding sponsor. I'm going to give you all this money for the, yes.
Awesome. The best so thing. Everything to win, nothing to lose. Okay. So we're now aligning perception with reality. What's the middle ground of what might happen? What's like a middle thing that might be in pretty good and a not so great mush together? What do you think?
They're going to say, well, you know, you hit the audience we want, boomers and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try it. We'll try it for a couple of months and see what happens.
Sure. Okay. So now you get support as you're growing and building that competence and stuff. And they're along for the ride with you. Okay. And even at the end of it, if they say, didn't work for me, I'm out. Are you any worse off than you were at the beginning of this whole thing?
Well, hopefully I have gained a little more confidence at that point, because I've talked to a few more people. So maybe I'm a little better off.
And you've learned what sponsors want, what they don't want, what works for them, because you're going to ask them questions, right? You're going to use the opportunity of working with them to get better. And if somebody says, no, I'm not interested, you also can say to them, okay, do me a favor. Like, okay, selling is over. Do me a favor. While I have you, what didn't resonate with you? Listen, I'm going to go out and look for more sponsors. What didn't work for you? What didn't sell it for you? And they'll probably go, now that you said to them, you're off the hook, I'm not selling you anymore. That's the mistake that a lot of people make, is they try and use that as a way to keep selling. You say, I'm not selling anymore. I just want some feedback. What didn't work? They tell you some stuff. You're like, uh-huh. And then you can even say that at the end. So if I were to change some of those things, would you be open to me coming back to you, or are we done?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Again, we are still no worse off than we were, except we've learned something and we might get an opportunity to come back at it, because now they like the fact that you're taking what they say seriously and you're going to do your best to act on it. It's all about recognizing what the worst thing can happen is and contextualize it, because that's what we're afraid of. And our story, the story we tell in our head, is I'm going to be humiliated and no one's ever going to want me. And I'm going to feel like such crap that I won't be able to get in bed, and I'm going to feel like a failure. And it's not going to happen. It's just not realistic. So make it realistic,
right?
And say, worst thing that can happen is this. Okay, let's go. Let's go and see what happens now. So now I have all of this place of possibility. That's what I've done my whole life. I go, what's the worst thing that can happen? I don't get the gig. I don't get the job. I don't get the opportunity. I don't, whatever. So?
Right. What's the worst?
What's the worst? You know, I learn a whole bunch, and I've learned that every time you put yourself out there, things magically have a way of kind of changing the trajectory, the course of your life. So I say yes to everything. Sure,
why not? You're so right. Put yourself out there, doors open. And here's the flip side of that question.
Yep.
The fear of success, is that as much of a real thing as the fear of failure?
I think really when people are afraid of success, it's because a seed was planted in their minds by someone else at some point in their life about playing small, about the fact that they really only deserved to take up a certain amount of space in the world, that they should be safe, that they're not worthy of something better. And until they go back and figure out what that thing is and kind of face it down, that's the inner saboteur, the inner critic that tells us this story. It's like the podcast from hell that just plays endlessly. And we need to expose that saboteur for what it is. It's not the truth. It's a culmination of all of these little pieces of criticism and little pieces of you know, negative nuggets that we've gotten from this myriad, you know, life that we've had from so many different people. But in our minds, we put them all together into one voice that says, you're not good enough.
Or and it's, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to get hurt. You're going to take, you know, it's, yeah.
But you only believe that if you think you're not good enough. Mm. That's where it goes to in the end. You can tell yourself whatever story and people go, oh, well, you know, it's better that I blah, 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 blah. And when I start digging, when I crack them open like a nut and I start poking and I go, what's really going on? What's really going on? They don't feel like they deserve it. They don't feel like they're good enough to have it. Mm. That's at the root of all of it. You know, because someone else told them. And you know what that's the equivalent of? That's the equivalent of going into the airport, going over to the baggage carousel, picking up somebody else's baggage off the carousel, dragging it down the causeway, taking it home and putting their dirty underwear on your head.
Ah!
We would never do that in life.
No.
Right? But and yet we do it all the time. We do it all the time. We take other people's baggage because remember, other people's criticism is their opinion. It is not fact. It is their perspective, their perception, their opinion. It is not truth. It is their truth. It does not have to be our truth. And while you don't want to be an arrogant a-hole and you want to look at from whom it comes and what the intention is of the criticism or of the feedback, look at it really carefully. Don't just accept whatever anybody says to you. My grandmother used to say, from whom it comes, Leslie. From whom it comes. And then you go, well, what's actually designed to help me and make me better? And the rest of it, you go, I am not for everyone. And that is just fine because I am not artificial vanilla.
Mm-hmm. No.
I'm a double twisty mocha choca frappuccino with an extra sprinkle and a cinnamon stick and some cayenne pepper sprinkled on top. And that is not going to be for everybody. But for those who dig it, they dig it large.
See, and I love that, Leslie, because that is so important to know. We are not for everybody. The people we are for will find us, like us, will use our skills. Yes.
Can you see at the top of my screen? It says your vibe attracts your tribe.
Oh, I love that.
That's what happens in this life is that if you try and be for everyone, you'll end up being for no one. You become so bland and so diminished and so you make yourself so small in order to fit in, you know, that you wonder why you're not getting noticed. You wonder why you're not standing out. You wonder why you're not getting the opportunities. Well, it's because you're actively trying to not stand out. And then you can't blame the world for not noticing you.
Right.
And maybe, you know, you do your best to stand out and only some people notice you. You go, hello, my people.
My people. Yes.
You know, like when I have to tell you, I'll tell you a little moment for me, right? So I launched my book. And of course, like any author who really prides themselves on being a writer because of my background is as a writer and who is so in her place of service and purpose with the message, all you want is for people to see it, to get it, to read it, to feel it, to act on it. It's like, if I could have given it away for free, I would have done that. Mm-hmm. It's everything that I wanted. And then you get the news that the book has hit the Wall Street Journal and USA Today. And I was like, I was waiting for this big reaction. Now, for the record, I'm not someone who needs a lot of external validation because I'm very full. I know how to internally validate. So I've been very fortunate that I've, you know, when you run a training company and you're in front of people, you get a lot of feedback. So I'm very full, you know, and I know who I am. But I realized that I had a moment in it where I was mad. And I was like, I'm very self-aware. So I was digging into it. I'm like, why am I mad? Why am I mad? And it's because it's not been easy to be me. Not been easy. And from the time that I was a little kid, I had to fight with the world because I refused to change for anybody. I refused. I didn't make it easy on other people and I didn't make it easy on myself. And I could have chosen differently when I was 5, 6, 7, 12, 17, 22, 24. And I didn't. I stayed true to who I was. I said, the world is not going to change me. I know who I am. I know what my power is and no one is going to diminish it. I'm going to choose what to do with my power. And if I hadn't done exactly what I did, I could not have gotten to that place of having the experiences that I did, of then in turn writing the book and then achieving that goal. And so I was kind of like, you see, world, you tried, but I wasn't having it. And I was so proud of myself for that. Yeah. But I was a little mad at the world. I was like, no, you didn't get me to change. No, didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen. And you have stayed true. So I'm curious now, you mentioned swagger blockers. So I want to know about those.
Yeah.
But how have you been able to gain the empathy for those people, most of us, who didn't hold on to ourselves at 5 and 6 and 17 and 24? How do you know the struggle of what that is if you were able to just power through it?
Because I know what they went through, and I know that at some moment they went, it's too hard. You know, I know I was there with that same struggle, and I know how I'm really tough. Like, I am so stubborn and so tough, and I know how incredibly hard it was for me. And I don't blame anybody for finding the point where they just go, I can't, it's too hard. I have such mad love for human beings. For the human condition, it's so complicated. It's so challenging. It's so beautiful. It's messy and it's imperfect. And I love people for that. That's what I love the most. And when I watch them trapped and in that much pain because they're trying to fool people, and it just, it puts them in a prison of their own making, that this, you know, like, don't look over here, look over here. Here's my glossy exterior. And one of my superpowers is to see right past it. I see right through it. And it scares the heck out of people because they're trying to do their thing. And I go, okay, here's what I see. And I tell them and they go, how could you know that? You know, it's like, that's why people call me a witch. And I go, because I see you. And I see you. I see all the things you're trying to make me not see through all of the things you're trying to project. That tells me everything that I know. And then I just want to hold them. I just want to hold them and go, it's okay, baby, come out. Aww. You're going to be safe here. And then I make sure that they are. That's something that's one of the things I use my fierceness and my passion for is in the training and the coaching space is to say, not on my watch will anyone mess with the real you when it comes out to play, when it pokes its little head out. You're going to find a safe space to practice just like everybody else's. We're all going to do it together. And if you won't do it, you got to go. You've got to go. I don't allow people to audit or to watch my training sessions. If you want to do it, you got to take part. So yeah. I've lost a lot of business through that where HR people or senior executives say, we want to watch or audit. I go, nope.
Yeah. Nope.
Not going
to
happen.
And you give some really good examples in the book. Talk to me about swagger blockers.
So imagine that the real you is trapped deep inside and that there are these five sort of concentric circles wrapping around you that are keeping you separate from the world. These are what I refer to as swagger blockers, and everybody has them. They're human condition stuff. So if we start with the one that's furthest out, closest to the world and furthest away from us, that's persona. It's that idea that we think we need to show up a certain way, walk, talk, dress, act a certain way in order to be accepted. It's that coat that we put on every morning that we wear out for the world. That's not the real us, but it's that avatar, that illusion of us. Mm-hmm. And so persona will really get in the way of your swagger because it keeps the real you from thing. You tell yourself this story that you're not good enough, thus you must put on this false front, and that keeps you separated from the real world. The next layer in is ambition. And don't get me wrong, I am all for ambition. I'm all for success and going after your dreams. But ambition can actually bite you in the butt. It can get in the way of your swagger because it can cause you to act in ways that aren't authentic to you in the ascent, right? You're so fixated on what the next rung of the ladder is that you'll do anything to get there. You will change who you are and how you behave and what your values are because you want it so badly. You want that validation so badly. So instead of focusing on yourself, like your true journey, focusing on your peers or colleagues, or most importantly, focusing on your followers, because you cannot be a leader without followers, your swagger is going to get trapped in that. So instead of being concerned about ambition, my focus in the book, I talk about being in your place of excellence. Mm-hmm. Just be that and things will happen. You don't lose connection with yourself. So now you've got ambition reinforcing the need for persona, right? That's the two are linked. Next layer in is insecurity. Insecurity is why you want that validation of the title or the ascent, right? It's all of the what ifs. What if I don't show up a certain way? What if I don't get that title? What if I don't do what I need to, what if? It's all of these questions and there are no answers in that. Mm-hmm. It's just that constant churning of uncertainty. That's what insecurity is. It's the lack of feeling secure because we don't have answers. We don't know things for sure. When we get caught up in that, that's when we're hit by the imposter syndrome, because the imposter syndrome is exactly that. What if? Right. What if people call me out? What if they accuse me of not having credibility? What if? So now you have insecurity reinforcing ambition, reinforcing persona. Next layer in is fear. Dreaded fear. Fear is the answer to the what if. What if I don't walk, talk, do, behave, whatever? Fear says to you, bad things will happen. Right. And because the brain does not like insecurity, it has a better safe than sorry default system. So it will always assume, even if you're optimistic, your brain will still choose the default of assuming the worst is going to happen, even if you're preparing for the best. Even if you want the best to happen, and you're like, okay, I'm going to stay open to it. Your brain wants to know what's going to happen. So it will go, well, there's a really good chance that bad things are going to happen. And if you don't have a ton of courage, you're going to go in that direction. I call them negative automatic thoughts. So, and we move away from fear. We're conditioned as humans, right? And then the brain can't differentiate between a tiger is going to eat me fear and my boss is going to give me a side eye or a sponsor is going to say no to me. It's fear is fear. Right. So now you have fear, reinforcing insecurity, reinforcing ambition, reinforcing persona. Last but not least, the final layer, the one that's closest to us, is the biggie. It's the scar tissue, the castle gates, the moat that makes sure that we stay safe. And it's pain, because pain is proof. Mm-hmm. Pain is, I did that once. It did not go well. I am never going back there again. I am not doing it. That's why children, burn themselves once on the stove and don't do it again, because they remember the pain. But again, what happens over time is the things that caused us pain, we forget that the context was so completely different. And we just assume that we're going to experience the same pain today. So for example, if you did a presentation in front of your class when you were in fourth grade and all the kids were laughing at you and you didn't know why, and it turned out you had a big booger hanging out of your nose, all you can remember is that it was an incredibly painful experience. And for 6 months after that, people called you booger head. And as a grown-ass woman, whenever you have to get up and speak in front of people, all you can hear in your head is a variation on booger head. And you're not even sure why. You just know that you're afraid. Because you've experienced the pain. So pain is really a huge limiter, because we'll do anything to avoid it. Anything, right? Yeah. So pain reinforces fear, reinforces insecurity, reinforces ambition, reinforces persona. So those are the swagger blockers.
All right. Well, that's pretty clear. you mentioned boxing. And when we were talking before we got on the screen, you said there was some lessons you learned in boxing that applied to business. Will you share some of that with us?
Well, in the thing about boxing is people think you have to be really brave to do it, but you don't really. It's like anything that you learn how to do progressively. Like if you're learning to drive a car, do they just throw you in and say, here's the car and go? No. First you learn about, okay, well, what are all the things in the car, blah, blah, blah. And eventually you get into the car and you have your driving instructor who also has the brake pedal there, right?
Right, right.
So when you learn how to box, you learn it slowly and progressively, and you learn what to do with your hands, what to do with your feet, how to move, how to breathe, how to throw punches, but you're not fighting with somebody. And this is what we always think when we're taking a new leap, that we're going to be thrown into the ring, literally thrown into the ring, and we'll be totally unprepared. You go, no, every step you take is designed to prepare you, right? That was the first thing. Then what I learned was that, you know, when you are learning to throw punches, boxing is like playing chess with your body. And you always have to be thinking about what's the next move, right? That's mm-hmm. why it's such a strategic game. So if you throw a punch, okay, and you are fixated on where that punch is going to land, and you're really like, where's that punch going to land? If you stay there, you're open. See how open I am here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I make the decision to release my hand quickly, I have to be thinking about what am I going to anticipate happens next? But see, because I have to think about if I throw this punch, it's going to leave me open. So it's this, and then it's this, and then it's a counter. In business, what happens is every time we make a move, we get so fixated on it. We want to watch how it lands. We want to test it. We want to make sure that it's perfect and everything. If we do that, we leave ourselves open. So you need to make a decision, throw that punch, and then move to the next thing that you're going to do that's going to move you forward again, and keep doing that. You don't want to stay still, because that's when you get open to a beatdown, for example, right?
So this is very intentional. You have to really think about all of the moves and how you're going to do it, and not just go, okay, I'm going to build up my courage for this punch, or I'm going to build up my courage for this pitch. I have to think about intentionally what's next and what's next and what's next.
Yeah. And also that you learn that you may have to take a punch in order to set yourself up for what is going to be a better move. And that's okay. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we do that too in business. We try and we think that everything has to be a move forward to success. Well, no, we don't learn as much from that as we do from the things that set us back a little bit. And mm-hmm. we may even have to do things that intentionally set us back so we can learn. Right. So there's no way that you can move forward without taking a few punches.
Yeah.
So you got to accept that going in and saying, well, how many punches am I willing to take?
Right.
And how open do I leave myself? That can really help you decide how fast you want to grow. How much do you want to test before you start spending money? How much money do you want to spend before you say, okay, I got to scale back? All of those decisions. But it's going to be in that process that you're going to learn far more than if you just said, my plan is to go in and just throw this flurry of punches and knock out the world. Well, that's not realistic. And because you're going in there only thinking about what you're going to do, you forget that there's something there that's going to throw punches back. You're not in there alone.
Right.
So the world is going to throw punches back at you, and you have to learn to take a step back, be strategic, make moves, and not be so fixated with just plowing through. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. You know, when I built my business, I did it without any experience whatsoever. I started a training company, zero experience, zero credibility, zero. And honestly, I waited for like the first 3 years. I kept waiting for someone to ask me what my accreditation was. I keep waiting.
Really?
And I had a big story planned. I was ready to handle it. You know, it was gonna be like, actually, I have none except for, and I'm a big believer in transferable skills.
Mm-hmm.
So my story would have been, well, having been a leader and watching the pain that my people were in, starting with training skills that I have very deeply embedded. So all of the things, for example, TV host allowed me to be better, a better presenter. Being a script editor allowed me to be a better storyteller. And having led my people and saw it from the inside helped me to understand what needed to happen in terms of quality leadership. So mm-hmm. we only trained the things that we knew as subject matter experts. Right. Yeah. And then, you know, my experience of my family running a children's summer camp and all of that. Yeah, right. And how do you create experiences? No one ever asked me. Never. No one ever asked me. And after 10 years, I didn't care. I was like, I got none except 10 years of experience. None.
Right. Yeah.
I got 10 years of experience. That's what it is. Right.
Leslie, I love you.
Oh, baby, I love you too.
I am going to plow through this book several times, I'm sure. But we're getting to the end of time. So, you know, Hey Boomer is all about motivating people 55 and over. And I know she looks fabulous, but trust me, she's a boomer too.
I'm a boomer, baby.
A young one, but a boomer. Yep. Anyway, so give us a couple of takeaways that can help people in this age group really own themselves, own their experience, share their wisdom with the world.
It is never too late to find your swagger. There is not an age limit on it in any way, shape, or form. In fact, I think that when we get older, we develop more of the wisdom and the courage to go after our swagger because we understand that we've earned the right and that we're way more in control of ourselves than we thought, and we're way less in control of the world. You know, we've learned that lesson. So we know that the one thing that we can control is us and the way that we show up in this world. And we have a little bit more of a very healthy, don't give a crapness about what other people have to think. So now is the time to tap into your swagger. Second thing is that know that swagger manifests differently for everyone. There's not one prescribed way to show up. It doesn't show up as this fronty, charismatic thing necessarily. Can be introverted and gentle and quiet and sweet and playful and goofy or intellectual. Whatever you are authentically, that is how your swagger is going to manifest. The other thing is, as it says on the book cover, which I will show you here, my little Easter egg to the people. So the subtitle is Unleash Everything You Are and Become Everything You Want. You notice that highlighted in yellow? Do you see those words? Can you read those words for me, Wendy?
You are everything.
You already have everything you need. You do not need anything extra. All you need to do is show the world everything you are. That's it. Because you're a badass just waiting to come out. It's your decision to just let it rip and say, screw it. If some people don't accept it, because I would rather be loved for exactly who I am than be accepted for being someone that I'm not.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I've got your website on the screen, Swagger the Book. If you want to see more about what Leslie does, you can go to her website, lesliem.com. She is amazing. I'm just so excited that you decided to join the show today, and I appreciate that so much.
My pleasure. I am so in service of your people. They are my people, my sisters, my brothers. Fist bump, fist bump. I love you all. You know,
we love you too. Yeah. So
we are powerful, this generation. We are powerful.
We are everything. Yeah.
Yeah. We are. Yeah.
So before we go, I mentioned the Walk to End Alzheimer's, who is one of our summit co-sponsors, Boomers Thriving After the Pandemic. I also want to mention our other co-sponsor, Meals on Wheels, and they enhance the quality of life of homebound individuals and seniors by providing nutritious meals, personal interaction, and independence. So join in their fight against food insecurity and loneliness by reaching out to your local Meals on Wheels today and sign up for our Alzheimer's Walk team. Let's see, where is that one? That's here. And sign up for the summit. Go to the heyboomer.biz website and sign up there. And who's our guest next week? June 14th, we're having Genevieve Paturo. And Genevieve is the founder of a nonprofit called The Pajama Program. So Genevieve was also in television. She was a marketing executive in television, and she was volunteering at a homeless facility when a six-year-old girl asked her a question that changed her life. And so you will hear about Genevieve's passion, Genevieve's struggle to get from where she was then to where she is today. It really is a remarkable story. I think you'll enjoy meeting her. So thank you all for joining us today, for joining me and Leslie, and for helping us to grow this community. I know your time is valuable. I know this time with Leslie was valuable. And I hope to see everybody again next week. Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks so much, Wendy. It was a hoot.
Bye.